Paramount Pictures presents an Enigma production. Starring Keith Carradine and Harvey Keitel in The Duelists. Screenplay by Gerald Vaughan Hughes, based on Joseph Conrad's story, The Duel. Produced by David Putnam, directed by Ridley Scott.
The duelist demands satisfaction. Honor, for him, is an appetite. This story is about an eccentric kind of hunger. It is a true story, and begins in the year that Napoleon Bonaparte became ruler of France.
Strasbourg, 1880. A young girl wearing a white bonnet and carrying a shepherding stick drives a gaggle of geese up a country lane, which is littered with fallen autumnal leaves. As the girl drives the geese further along the path, she is stopped by a tall man in military uniform with a short, neat moustache curled up at the ends. He looks sternly at the young girl and turns his back on her, looking down at the field below. The young girl clambers up onto the grassy mound and watches from behind the military man's shoulders. In the misty field below them, two men in white shirts and breeches stand opposite each other holding épées. A few onlookers stand watching. One of the fighters, Lieutenant Farreau, looks intensely at his opponent. He sports a neat moustache curled up at the end, and he wears a black silk cravat. The two men raise their épées in a poise ready to duel. Lieutenant Farreau calmly parries his opponent's thrust. The two men stand back in on guard. Stood in on guard, the men eyeball each other with a look of focus and determination. Farreau attacks his opponent. His opponent jumps out of the way and Farreau thrusts at him. Farreau stands casually sweeping his épée from side to side. Suddenly he strikes at his opponent. Unfazed, Farreau watches his opponent tentatively creep towards him. He crouches back, pulling his épée into a thrusting position ready to lunge. He fixes his smouldering gaze on his opponent. The young girl watches on, mesmerized. Farreau slashes his opponent's hand. He reels in pain, then turns to lunge back at him. Farreau stabs his opponent straight through the side. Clasping onto the bloody épée, he collapses to the floor. Farreau ambles away from the dying man. The young girl watching runs away. In the elegant hussar's office quarters, men wearing military breeches, white shirts and black silk cravats sit relaxing.
Gentlemen, General Fayard.
The men all stand to attention as the general strides in.
Who knows that cannot run?
Seventh Hussars.
Farreau looks to the floor as the others avert his gaze.
I do, sir.
You know him well?
I've once or twice come across him, sir.
Then come across him again and tell him he's confined to his quarters under close arrest.
Lieutenant Farreau has skewered the mayor's nephew, an affair of honor, half a minute's work. I have spent the last 2 hours apologizing to the mayor on his behalf. Could you convey to Lieutenant Farreau how much I should be likely to enjoy that?
I hope so, sir.
Yeah, I hope so, too. In case he feels an interest, the mayor's nephew is still alive. More or less. Tell him I shall take pleasure in seeing him later.
I want some food! Perhaps you could rout out a crust.
I regret the interruption.
There.
smartly dressed in a tight embroidered military jacket and black cavalry boots, a young, tall, slim lieutenant with a neat moustache turned up at the ends, walks out into the barracks and marches up to a wooden door in the private quarters.
Huh? Is Lieutenant Farrell at home?
He's gone out.
Gone out where?
I don't know.
My dear, this is very important soldier's business. Of course you know.
He went to pay a call.
Pay a call on whom? I'm sure he keeps nothing from you.
Madame de Leon.
Did he? He has an angel at home to watch over his breeches, and off he goes paying a call on Madame de Leon. He must be quite blind. Thank you.
In Madame de Leon's salon, refined men and women sit in elegant surroundings listening to the singer. The smartly dressed lieutenant watches on from the edge of the room. Ferreau stands behind Madame de Leon. The lieutenant crosses the room and approaches Madame de Leon.
Madame. I must ask you to pardon this intrusion. I'm here on military business, which is a lamentable reason for invading your drawing room.
Come again this evening and plead your forgiveness.
You are most gracious. Madame, I have orders for Lieutenant Farrell.
And now the mazurka in G minor.
Please excuse us. I have an order to convey to you from General Chayar. You are to report immediately to your quarters and remain there under close arrest.
What did you say?
I'm only a messenger. That must be obvious to you. I believe you heard my message.
Yes, damn you, I heard your message and arrest for what?
You did fight a duel this morning.
Of course.
You make dueling sound like a pastime in the Garden of Eden. I think we ought to leave now, don't you agree?
What have I done? Was I to let some sauerkraut eater wipe his boots on the uniform of the 7th Hussars?
The sauerkraut eater's uncle happens to be the mayor of Strasbourg. The general was obliged to acknowledge his complaint.
Oh, then I'm obliged to the general. So I suppose I should be grateful to you for taking the trouble to find me.
Frankly, I think you ought to be. I had no end of trouble finding where you were. Try to calm yourself.
Calm myself.
I do advocate it most earnestly.
Would you let them spit upon Napoleon Bonaparte?
Bonaparte? Bonaparte has no more to do with this than Madame de Leon.
You think that name's common coin for the street?
Never care.
Sir, whichever name you choose to defend,
never care.
I use it with the utmost respect and solely in the cause of logic.
What do you mean, whichever name? You know damn well which name.
I must own myself.
You'll always be there.
You leave us alone, please.
Back in his private quarters, Ferreau's wife leaves the room. The tall young lieutenant waits awkwardly by the door.
Your duty is to victimize me. Am I mistaken? You have chosen to hunt me out in the drawing room of a lady toward whom I feel
Sir,
the deepest...
Sir, I respect your inexpressible sentiments. But I can assure you that the hunting was no choice of mine.
You have insulted me. You have insulted me!
I have strained my patience in order not to do so.
And I demand an apology.
This is too ridiculous.
He goes to leave.
Really too ridiculous. A proper general's poodle. Can you fight?
I see no reason whatever for us to fight.
What reason would you like? Shall I spit in your face? Shall I cut a chunk out of your backside, or would that be too ridiculous?
He goes to leave, but Ferreau pushes him back.
How do you get back to your general now? Through the window?
I believe you're really quite a madman.
You draw your sword.
Ferreau belligerently grabs his sword. The young lieutenant does not move.
You draw your sword. Oh my God, I'll chase you down the street like a chicken.
You will chase me nowhere. I will be delighted to fight you at the first opportunity.
You fight now.
At this moment, I'm here on duty, and you are under arrest.
Now!
For dueling, you ape!
Now! You fight now.
Where?
The guard.
Seconds.
You want second? I'll find you second. Old man, stand here. And watch me.
Outside the front of the private quarters, the lieutenant pulls out his sword. Faro swipes at him. The men stand in on guard. Faro's wife watches on, cowering in fear. The lieutenant almost falls to the floor. Faro spits on the ground. Faro glares at the lieutenant as he backs away. Then he swipes at him, but his strike is blocked. The lieutenant parries Faro's thrust and is thrown into the entrance of the quarters. The lieutenant lunges at Faro, slashing his forearm and then punching him in the face. In the army surgeon's quarters, Dr. Jacqueline lies amongst papers on his daybed, playing a wooden flute.
Enter.
The lieutenant enters. He has a small cut on each cheek. The doctor sits bolt upright.
You've been scratched by a woman.
Correct.
Did you commit a crime of passion?
Certainly not.
No. No, I agree, that would be out of character. Well, what happened?
I wounded a man in a duel.
What type of wound?
Cut across the forearm.
Name of adversary?
Gabriel Faro.
He fought a duel this morning.
He also fought a duel this afternoon.
I've anatomized the military man. I have literally picked through his brains. It's my fate to go on putting him together. I haven't the slightest idea how he works. Where do I find this,
Lieutenant Faro?
What was the cause of the quarrel?
Ask him.
Cause of quarrel obscure. So, we appear to be more civilized. I mean, a tomcat would never dream of sending a surgeon to another tomcat.
He hands the doctor a piece of paper with Faro's address. The doctor puts it in his medical box.
Oh. You could try this on your face.
The doctor hands him a bottle of amber liquid. The lieutenant stands before the general.
You were recommended to me as a reliable, intelligent young officer. You're a damn disgrace. You look a damn disgrace, like a damned Hottentot. Look at yourself. You will return to your regiment at once. I have no further use for you. Pending a court of inquiry, you will be confined to barracks under close arrest. Gone.
Sir, I shall welcome the inquiry.
We will you, Lieutenant? If you emerge from it pure as driven snow, you remain an imbecile. Get out.
He nods to the general and leaves. Later, the lieutenant sits in the dark in his private quarters. Dr. Jacqueline strikes a match and lights some candles.
The whole town is buzzing with it. I spoke with a delightful old gentleman who affected to believe in the transmigration of souls. He suggested we had both been enemies in a previous incarnation.
What did Faro suggest?
He kept remarkably quiet about it. Much like yourself.
Well, it will all come out at the inquiry.
There won't be any inquiry. You're disappointed.
War.
Yes, yes. War again. You'll be a free man, back with your troop in the morning.
Good.
Imagined you would think so. So I have brought.
The doctor pulls out a bottle of wine from his bag.
Aha! Two bottles. One corkscrew. And my flute. Faro intends to kill you.
Is that what he says?
No, not to me, but rumor goes round.
damn him anyway? He's most unreasonable.
The enemies of reason have a certain blind look. He has that look, don't you think?
What can I do?
I have given it some thought. No. You cannot fight, one, if you're in different places, physical impossibility. Two, if you're of different rank, it's a breach of discipline. And three, if the state is at war. Duels of nations take absolute precedence. Therefore, keep away from him. Keep ahead of him. Put your trust in Bonaparte.
Thank you.
Just before history rolls over it, what was the cause of the duel?
Are you asking on behalf of the town? Call it a light cavalry skirmish. All in all, far from certain myself.
The doctor starts to play his flute.
After 6 months of hard campaigning, there followed an interval of peace.
Augsburg, 1801. At a military base camp, Faroe sits in a large tent, arm wrestling.
Hold him, Gabriel. Are you holding onto the table?
No!
Richard, is he on the table?
No, not.
Got you.
Come on.
Left arm, double leg.
No, I only bet right arm. Another?
Yes.
What's your bet?
Trust me.
No, you must be joking.
Trust me!
No! Come on. Yeah. Next time. Come on, any more bets?
Thoreau moves away and sits with a military man who's been watching.
Their muscle never healed properly.
He picks up a cat from the man's lap.
You remember that boudoir soldier in Strasbourg, that staff lackey? You'll act for me, won't you?
The man nods in agreement. The young lieutenant who fought Faroe in Strasbourg, Armand Dubert, walks through the town dressed in his military finery. A woman wrapped in a shawl jumps off the back of a cart transporting soldiers.
Armand! Armand Dubert!
Laura!
Hey, Moustache, come back! Now tell me you're married.
Madame, I am entirely at your service.
My dear Armand, how very gallant. What a relief.
Through the heavy rain, they gaze deeply into each other's eyes.
Well, now that I've found you, it would be an act of mercy if you put us both to bed.
In Armand Dubert's private quarters.
Marie Rose went bald. She caught the mange in Italy. Poor bitch.
How did Jacques respond to that?
Never saw it. He was killed at Marengo. Simon must still be in Egypt. And Etienne married that fat girl of his. And I have received a token of love.
Laura shows him the ring on her finger.
I find that rather daunting.
With this ring, I renounce love.
Placing the ring down, Laura gently moves Armand's legs apart and straddles him. Lit by the warm glow of the fire, her breasts bulge from beneath her loose-fitting muslin slip. Armand holds her tightly.
And make do with you.
They kiss each other tenderly.
You're the one I always wanted. You. You who's a...
Soldiers prepare horses and weapons at a military base camp. Dressed in his fitted embroidered military jacket and cavalry boots, Armand Dubert strides purposely amongst the tents in the pouring rain. He observes his surroundings with a look of disdain.
What's this?
I'll have to drive in deeper, sir.
You'll do no such thing. Who the devil taught you to picket horses so near a river? There's going to be water around their knees in 2 hours. Well, the whole line moved to higher ground. Quick about it.
Sir.
Watched closely by Faroe's second, Dubert walks through the muddy camp.
Lieutenant Dubert.
Yes?
You're acquainted with Lieutenant Faroe.
Yes.
In a field surrounded by rolling hills and woodland, Faroe's second stands by the bare winter trees smoking a pipe. He watches two younger soldiers practicing their sword dueling skills. Dubert and Faroe approach on horseback. The men dismount and follow their seconds across the field edged by woodland. They remove their winter cloaks and draw their épées from their sheaths. The weapons catch the glistening sunlight. Faroe and Dubert slowly walk towards each other. Dubert wears a protective black cover over one forearm. Faroe cuts through the air with practiced slices. The two men position themselves in on guard. Faroe eyeballs Dubert with a look of rabid obsession. Dubert returns his gaze with mannered obligation. After a slight tap to his épée from Faroe, Dubert holds his finger aloft and stops the fight from starting. Dubert blows his nose and puts his handkerchief away. He turns back to Faroe, who is pacing about with a look of frustration. Sheep gaze in the background as the men reconvene and position themselves in on guard. Both men focus intensely on their opponent. The men stand in Sante Montefer, reading the tension through their swords, waiting for the right moment to strike. Faroe stabs Dubert in the chest. He recoils in pain and staggers across the field to his waiting seconds. Faroe triumphantly follows behind Dubert, who collapses on the ground. The doctor and his seconds rush to his aid.
Gently, gently, gently. Just take off his cravat, please.
Faroe watches on in eager anticipation as the doctor removes Dubert's bloodied shirt. Dubert winces in pain.
Armand, it was a fair set too. Won't hurt your reputation, I can promise you that. Why don't you make it up like a couple of good fellows?
Yeah, that's better.
There's no need to bear him a grudge.
Oh. All right. I shake it.
Dubert's second walks out into the middle of the field. Faroe's second walks out to speak with him. Faroe's second returns to him.
It's quite bad.
Can he continue?
No, he's unable to.
Damn.
Gabriel, shake hands and forget it. Whatever he did, you've paid him back now. All I hear, he's a very decent fellow.
Decent? Don't expect decency from his kind. Look at him lolling about there on the ground. One touch and he's off home to his beloved general.
Next time, Dubert!
Faroe storms off. The two seconds stand face to face and give each other a nod of acknowledgement. Armand lies in a tin bath by the fire with a bandage wrapped round his chest. Laura adds salts and begins to tenderly wash him. She pours in water heated by the fire as he lies with his eyes closed and his face etched in pain. L- Laura looks lovingly at Armand as she gently strokes his hair. Slowly he opens his eyes, and Laura smiles sweetly back at him.
You should have made him shake hands with you.
I was flat on my back. We cannot control his affairs from that position.
You should have got up. You weren't dead.
Wasn't well. Besides, he only would have stuck me again. He was waiting for the chance.
Do you mean you'd have gone on fighting?
No question. It would have been the only honorable thing to do.
What's the matter?
I'm going to sneeze.
Oh, no, you mustn't. You don't have to. Come on, think of something else. Describe honor.
Honor?
Honor.
Honor is...
Go on, you must!
Indescribable. Unchallengeable.
At an elegant dining room in town, Armand, Laura and his second, La Corbe, sit drinking tea. Laura watches someone across the room. Armand clocks her and follows her gaze.
All the little girls adore you.
Well, you're a notorious and savage duelist.
Savage.
Notoriously savage. And it's rumoured that you live with a savage bitch.
It's a shame he's such an idle brute. One more duel, and God knows he needs the exercise, one more duel would make his reputation. Young ladies would take to their smelling salts whenever he narrowed his eyes.
Narrow your eyes. I think you've got a long way to go.
La Corbe spots Ferreau's second outside the window. Armand leans back in his seat to hide out of view.
We could leave by the back lane.
What for? If he wants me, he'll find me. You know him?
Yes.
Armand watches on as a man sharpens his sword on a spinning stone wheel. Stood by the fire in Armand's quarters, Laura takes the ring from an embroidered silk bag and tentatively places it back on her finger.
Surely there must be some other way out.
Don't talk about it anymore.
Armand stares resolutely at Laura and places his sword back in its sheath. Laura looks pleadingly at him.
The only way out is to go through with it. One has to be ready. It takes all one's attention to be ready.
At night, wrapped up in her shawl, Laura walks amongst the tents and fires at the military camp. She walks past the roaring campfires and over to the tent pointed out to her. At the entrance, she wraps her shawl tightly around her body, takes a deep breath, and then heads inside.
Thank you.
Yes. Ferreau and his second lounge in the tent smoking.
Gabriel.
Ferreau gestures to another hussar.
I live with Armand Hubert.
Ferreau pulls out his sword.
I knew a man who was stabbed to death by a woman, gave him the surprise of his life.
I once knew a woman who was beaten to death by a man. I don't think it surprised her at all.
You're a soldier's lady. You should live here with me.
Nobody understands why you fight with Armand. It's supposed to be a secret between the pair of you. I believe it's a secret of your very own. I believe... you feed your spite on him with no more sense than a nasty, blood-sucking louse.
Who do you suppose cares what you think?
No one.
Then why are you here?
Came to take a look at you.
Look.
Ferreau stares at her with a look of blind belligerence. Holding back her tears, she flees. Sat bare-chested, Armand writes by candlelight.
Do you remember Martin?
Gunnery sergeant who lost his arm.
Yes. He's out of the army now. He works at the ordnance factory in Rouen. I think he wants to marry me.
Sat up in bed, Laura looks at him for a reaction.
He sent me the ring.
What ring?
She elegantly shows him her hand.
This ring.
Oh, that ring.
She pulls her hand away and fiddles with the ring on her finger. Armand watches.
Where is
it? Hurt and disappointed, she turns away from him.
When I'm ready.
Dressed in a long dark coat and white gloves, Laura quickly climbs a stairwell. On the landing, she walks over to a wooden door through which the noise is coming from. A man with beads of sweat running down his scarred face answers the door.
I was told I might find Lieutenant Dubert at this address.
Not here.
Disheartened, she bows her head and leaves. Inside the bare room, the scarred man, dressed in protective chest padding, pours himself a drink. He glances over and grins at Dubert, who's resting his sword on his shoulder. The man slowly picks up his sword from the table and lunges at him.
On the watch, sir! Always on the watch. They don't all fight like fine gentlemen.
Laura sits having her cards read.
The Two of Swords, reversed. Strife without reason, a quarrel pursued for its own sake.
Laura listens to the woman reading her cards intensely.
Does this suggest your problem? Seven of Cups. It would seem that you must make a difficult choice.
She smiles knowingly at the tarot reader. Her smile fades and sadness creeps across her face.
The moon. The moon is a symbol of solitude. Here is the path you must take. This is the path of instinct. Everyone who travels on that path travels alone. Between the two dogs. Do I leave them both behind?
You must answer your own questions now. You're alone.
In the darkness of Armand's room, Laura applies red lip colour to her lips. She notices the red stain left behind on her finger, and with a resigned look, she slowly pulls a sword from its sheath. Using her red lip colour, she carefully writes across the blade of the sword. Armand opens the door to his empty private quarters. He slowly eyes the room. His gaze comes to rest on the sword lying across his weathered oak table. Closing the door, he walks over and looks at the word goodbye, spelt out in red lip colour across the blade. Sitting down, he slowly traces the letters with his finger. Solemnly, he takes a sip of wine and with a cloth wipes away the writing from the blade. In blood-soaked clothes, Ferreau and Dubert duel with heavy sabres inside a stone-walled barn. Soldiers and seconds watch on from large window openings. Exhausted, bloodied and in pain, Dubert strikes at Ferreau's head. Ferreau jumps out of the way and returns a swipe at Dubert. Summoning up all of his energy, Ferreau swipes at Dubert.
Dubert.
As Dubert falls to the ground, Ferrose slashes open his shoulder. Barely able to stand, the weary men stagger around, struggling to raise their sabers. They try and strike each other. Unable to lift their sabers, the men start to wrestle. With no energy left, they fall to the floor. Observers rush in and break the pair apart. Outside the general's office in a large empty room, Dubert sits in his military uniform with one arm bound up in a sling. As he turns his head to listen in at the door, a small bird flies around the room. The large wooden door opens.
The general will see you now, sir.
Carrying his hat under one arm, Dubert limps tentatively into the general's office. He stands at one end of a long table covered in red fabric. The general sits at the other end by a roaring log fire.
Sit down before you fall down. Your colonel speaks highly of you. I'll admit I found you quite useful myself, yet in contact with this pharaoh, you persistently behave like a wild beast. Why is that?
Sir, do you wish to reconvene a court of inquiry?
Certainly not. No time to waste on that now.
Sir, as a crucial point of honor, I cannot speak freely about the conduct of Lieutenant Farrell, unless he has an opportunity to put his own case.
Claptrap.
Sir, I cannot fight the man three times and then tell tales on him.
Judging by the look of you, a change of tactics is what you need. Very well. Convention allows you to be a chivalrous half-wit, but you will cease being a quarrelsome half-wit. You will fight no more duels under my command. Now, is that understood?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, since you're now a captain, it would be a gross breach of discipline. Your colonel considers you fit to command a troop. I'm not exactly sure what I think you're fit for, but I will not oppose his decision. If you feel strong enough, you may leave now.
Grimacing in pain, Dubert carefully gets to his feet, stands to attention and nods his head to the general. He turns and limps towards the door. Lübeck, 1806.
5 years passed. The map of Europe changed, and so did military fashion.
Dubert walks through the alleyways of Lübeck with shoulder-length hair and an unbuttoned embroidered jacket. Running up into an alehouse, Dubert steps over prostitutes and their clients cavorting on the stairs. He rebuffs the advances of waiting whores.
Off the street, darling!
Uh-oh, next time.
Dubert walks into the main room of the tavern. A small group of musicians play and people dance and drink in the candlelit eaves of the building. Through the clouds of smoke, he scans around, looking for someone. A reveller approaches him and hands him a piece of bread. With a nod of thanks, Dubert wanders off. He spots La Corbe smoking a pipe and walks over to him.
Cheer up. You look muffish. Cheer up. I have some news to tell you. Sit down. I have news to tell you. The 7th Hussars have come to Lübeck. Farrell is behind you.
With shock and fear in his eyes, he looks over his shoulder.
I'm sorry, I... Let me get his rank. Captain. Arnold. Perhaps for your own sake, you should face him now.
How can you avoid it? He'll hunt you out in the end.
Keep your head down. This is my news. I'm being seconded to the staff of Marshal Bernadotte. My appointment carries the rank of major. I'm to report for duty in a fortnight, and the colonel has granted me a fortnight's leave. Gia, I wish to consult you in the utmost confidence upon a fine point of honor. Goodbye, Major.
They shake hands. As De Burgh gets up to leave, a drunk soldier approaches him. Across the tavern, Ferraud and his second stand up. Ferraud catches Dubert's gaze. He raises three fingers and points them at the forearm wounded in their first duel. Wrapped up in his long military coat, Dubert walks along a country road with his head down deep in thought. Laura runs to catch up with him.
Armand!
Laura!
I come through Lubeck and the town is humming with your name. Why weren't you killed at Elchingen? That was my last news of you.
It was a hard day for the regiment.
But nothing cures a duelist.
How is Martin?
Monu's gone astray. He died of typhus in the epidemic last July.
Very sorry. You married? I never heard.
Yes. Right at the end, poor boy. For all the good it did. Widow's weeds aren't much help to a lady of the garrison. So now I beg and strike up friendships.
Laura, go back to France. There's only grief to be got from following soldiers.
My chance. He said, go to that fool, Armand. He'll take you on again.
The hope fades from her eyes as they fill with tears.
This time he'll kill you.
She storms away, leaving Dubert stood contemplating her words. Dubert sits by the fire in his quarters. Le Corbe comes in.
We thought on horseback.
On horseback?
As a compliment to the cavalry. Ferraud has agreed. The regiment expects it.
The regiment expects it? I see. We're now fighting this duel as a compliment to the cavalry.
Armand. Like it or not, you are a man of reputation. A famous fire eater. It brings you responsibilities. You must think of yourself as fighting on parade. Ferraud has been boasting all day, but the betting still holds at even money.
I'm going to be killed. Responsibly. On horseback. As a compliment to the cavalry.
That's a useless sort of talk.
Gilles. I'm not fanatical enough to persevere in this absurdity. If he so earnestly desires to kill me, he will kill me.
Damn it, kill him!
It's absurd.
Morning. Combat should be well attended. I hear that Lebrun has given a breakfast party.
I hope the weather improves for them.
Dressed in his military finery and fur busby, Dubert rides into a coppice of silver birch trees flanked by Le Corbe and another on horseback. Ferraud's supporters sit by campfires eating a breakfast of boiled eggs and wine in the early morning mist.
Tell you my idea.
Dubert rides past the group, making his arrival known. Leaving his men on horseback, he canters off through the trees to a clear path on which to duel. Ferreau rides his ebony horse to one end of the path. His horse pounds the ground in anticipation. Dubert watches Ferreau from the other end. A glimmer of fear darts across his composed face.
Hello.
Ferreau restrains his eager horse. Ceremoniously, he pulls his cavalry saber from its sheath and raises it high above his head. Dubert nervously wraps the material attached to his saber around his shaking hand. He pulls his weapon out of its sheath and holds it to his shoulder. His lips quiver and he takes a deep breath. Both men raise their weapons. Dubert trembles and twitches. His face is etched with fear. Breathing deeply, he tries to suppress his distress.
Prepare to advance!
The men start riding towards each other with their sabers poised. They gather speed to a gallop. As they charge towards each other, images of Ferreau in their past, duels, and Laura's disgust flash in Dubert's mind. With each image, Dubert's ferocity grows. Charging, he slices at Ferreau's head.
Captain Ferreau has taken a slight cut across the forehead, but until the blood has stopped, he can't see. I regret the duel must be discontinued.
Ferreau lies on the ground, blood pouring from a large wound to his head. Dubert gallops away, jumping a hay cart, obstructing his path.
Ferreau was posted to Spain. Dubert remained in Northern Europe. 6 years later, the Emperor's Grand Army regrouped for Armageddon.
Russia, 1812. Frozen like statues, the corpses of dead soldiers lie in the deep snow and ice. A pair of eyes appear from underneath layers of clothing. Shivering in the snow, Dubert stands looking out across the bleak and desolate camp and the dead soldiers lying frozen to the spot. Cannons stand frozen solid. Soldiers sit rooted, unable to move from the cold. Only their despairing eyes can be seen from under their clothes and hats. Dubert leads a group of soldiers wrapped tightly in coats and blankets, slowly through the muddy slush towards camp, where men huddle shivering round a small fire. As the biting wind swirls around them, the troops sit around the raging campfire, grouped together for warmth. Their coats are heavy with frost, and ice clings to their faces. Soldiers try to warm their frost-bitten fingers. Dubert sits amongst the men, pulling his clothes tightly to keep himself warm. He looks across the fire at the desperate faces of the other men. Dubert's eyes widen as he sees Ferreau in a two-pointed cocked hat sat huddled by the fire. Ferreau meets Dubert's gaze through the smoke of the fire. They stare deeply into each other's eyes. Struggling in the fierce, icy wind, Farrow pulls himself to his feet. He walks over and picks up two muskets. Holding one in each hand, he sits back down and smirks at Dubert. Dubert shakes. In the glare of the morning light, the soldiers wake from their sleep. A blanket of snow covers their clothing. Dubert struggles to stand up, snow falling from his clothes as he moves. Farrow stands arrogantly and watches a Cossack on horseback gallop deep into the woods. He marches over to the camp where the exhausted and despondent soldiers try to keep warm.
Listen! All of you! That wood stinks with Cossacks! I want some volunteers! Listen! Volunteers! All of you! Volunteers!
The soldiers do not move. Dubert stands and turns to look at Farrow. Dubert stumbles towards him.
I'll come with you.
Farrow glares at Dubert and then turns and leaves. Dubert follows. The two men slowly traipse through the deep snow and biting winds past the frozen corpses of soldiers. The pair approach a wind and frost-ravaged wagon. Studying the wreckage, they see the iced corpses of soldiers resting against the wagon's broken wheels and the wagon's horse lying frozen beneath a dusting of snow. Looking out over the vast, desolate, snow-covered landscape, the men, armed with dueling pistols, keep guard and present a common front. Exhausted, the men slowly turn and face each other, positioning themselves to begin a duel. Their skin is worn from the cold. They stare deep into each other's eyes. A Cossack appears on horseback, dressed in a woolen overcoat and a grand black fur hat.
Yes, a teacher.
Farrow shoots the Cossack on horseback in the chest. Dubert fires at a group of them in the distance who ride off. Standing side by side, Dubert turns to Farrow.
Pistols next time.
Dubert giggles childishly to himself. Emotionless, Farrow walks back to the injured Cossack. He pulls a knife from the wounded man and slashes his throat. He scrambles around in the snow for the food the Cossack had been eating. Dubert pulls out a small silver hip flask and struggles to unscrew the top.
By tomorrow, with luck, we shall be across the Niemen.
Farrow glares at him and disdainfully walks away. With a look of forbearance, Dubert watches him leave. He heats the top of the hip flask with his breath, closes his eyes and takes a swig. Camp, Dubert comes across Farrow's second, sat frozen like a statue. The iced corpse sits rigid, looking out across the wilderness. Snow and ice has almost covered his entire face, and only his desperate eyes can be clearly recognized. Dubert walks away. Tour, 1814. Dressed in a brown tailcoat, Dubert uses a walking stick to support himself as he limps down a tree-lined avenue with two young boys.
Did you ever speak to Napoleon?
As a matter of fact, I once delivered him an important message.
Did he say thank you?
Oh, I suppose he did. I don't know. It was very noisy at the time.
Was it right to send him to Elba?
Well, he couldn't share a palace with King Louis, could he?
Well, why not?
Go on.
The boys run into the arms of Dubert's sister, Leonie, who stood outside her grand stone house. He smiles and limps towards her. The two of them stroll arm in arm through the grounds.
How's your leg today?
Progress is slow.
Come, sit and rest here. I have plans for you.
Leonie, my life is yours. It's my ambition to be known as the old general who lives with his sister.
That is exactly what I feared. It is therefore my ambition to see you married as soon as is decently possible. Keep quiet and pay attention. The heiress from Valmaseek, the estate across the river, is a sweet child called Adele. Her parents are dead and her uncle has become the dearest friend of mine. It will be the easiest thing in the world to arrange, and it will suit you admirably. I know what you're thinking. She is an ugly girl and she will make me miserable. I assure you, she was far more beautiful than you deserve, and she will make you very happy. You are at liberty to speak.
What color is her hair?
Raven-colored.
I have no further questions at this time.
Riding proudly on his white horse in the sunshine, Dubert trots up the sweeping tree-lined avenue of the Valmaseek estate. He rides into the front grounds of the grand Valmaseek estate, stopping to drink in his beautiful surroundings. He dismounts and limps slowly across the courtyard to tie up his horse. He wanders into a dark stable block and walks over to an elderly bootmaker sat working by candlelight.
I'm looking for the Chevalier de Rivarol.
General Dubert, I believe. I've not hitherto been privileged to meet a general of Bonaparte's army.
General of Brigade, sir, and only recently promoted. A mere imp of Satan. I cannot claim to be one of his demons.
You jest with me, sir.
In a neighborly way.
The bootmaker gestures to Dubert to sit down. As he sits, he catches a glimpse of a raven-haired young woman in a flowing green gown and white shawl.
Let me make you a pair of boots. In a neighborly way.
I would esteem it an honor.
Good boots are not an honor, they're a pleasure. About the time that you were learning to be a soldier, I was learning to make boots. I've supported myself as a bootmaker. Now that I'm an aristocrat once more, I have to drum up trade. Sloth is the curse of the aristocracy.
The Chevalier found you vastly well bred. He said you had a very good leg.
Sound like a horse. By God, I'm lucky he didn't look at my teeth.
I do hate that swearing. Don't you dare do it in front of Adele. Have you seen her?
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have. Don't sulk, you have.
Isn't this marriage broken getting a little out of fashion?
Nothing sensible goes out of fashion.
Leonie shoots him a stern look.
They're all coming over tomorrow from Valmaseek.
Metal, metal, metal.
Nonsense.
A horse-drawn carriage drives up the sweeping tree-lined avenue to Leonie's elegant home. Her young boys run out to greet their guests. Adele, a young natural beauty with a smattering of delicate freckles and rosebud lips, gracefully steps out of the carriage, followed by her elderly uncle.
General Dubert, Mademoiselle de Valmasique.
Smiling, he kisses her hand. Leonie's son holds up a toad.
Here, let me have a look at him. Very handsome fellow. They have golden eyes, you know.
And jewels inside their heads.
So I believe.
Adele and Dubert walk through the grounds of Valmasique in the hazy sunshine, talking and laughing together. In the bootmaker's workshop, Dubert tries on his new handmade boots. Adele watches on, laughing. Adele and the children scamper through the estate. Dubert limps along behind them, happily watching as they play. Adele and Dubert walk their horses through a wide open field.
Were I a young man again, rather than an old, lame creature, I'd ask you to marry me.
Well, don't you want to marry me now?
My dear, we both know what's expected of us, don't we? If I were to neglect to make your proposal, no blame would attach to you. I think perhaps you might be saved from a sad, dull life.
If you neglect to make me a proposal, my uncle will go mad.
Damn it, you're put on this earth to coddle your uncle.
Shh! I have heard you do swear most terribly.
Nonsense. I'm a temperate man. Temperate in my speech. I love you. Adele. My dearest Adele. It would make me very happy. Happy beyond all expectation if you would do me the honor to become my wife.
Yes.
He turns to the horses. At Leonie's.
It was a fiasco.
Nonsense. She accepted you?
What else could she do?
Nothing, I should hope. It was a proper, settled arrangement. Oh, Armand. In marriage, events of that kind are not important. A good marriage settles down quietly, like moss. I've never heard a bad word spoken about moss.
Moss? Leonie, an unkind plot has been laid against her. Very well, if she's good and biddable, she'll settle down. But it's not fair. She's young. She has that magic.
You are in love?
Yes, I'm in love.
Well, then. I can't be bothered with you. Go and play billiards.
Leonie goes back to turning cards over in her game of patience.
No cheating.
Go and play billiards.
Outside, on an overcast day, Dubert sits inside a carriage talking to a moustached colonel.
Surely you will not turn down the opportunity of a brigade. The Emperor is our hope and strength. We belong to him.
I have entertained the notion that I may belong to myself.
It has been said that you do not love the Emperor.
By whom?
By General Ferro. He knows you well, I believe.
General Ferro has made occasional attempts to kill me. That does not give him the right to claim my acquaintance.
And then it is also said that he fought you in defense of the Emperor's honor.
That is impertinent trash. You have my answer to Marshal Grouchy. I shall write to confirm it at once. Good day.
Colonel, do you sometimes meet with General Ferro?
Now and again, sir.
Then ask him, if you will, what the honor of the Emperor has to do with Madame de Lyon.
Madame de Lyon?
I think that was the lady's name. He should remember better than I.
With a look of confusion, the colonel watches Dubert leave. Dubert watches the carriage drive away. In General Farreau's candle-lit quarters, three officers sit busily writing with quills, whilst others study and organise paperwork. The colonel perches on the edge of a long oak table. Farreau stands by a large open fireplace, wearing a white muslin shirt and black silk cravat.
Damn his impudence.
That was the lady's name, sir.
Madame de Lyon. Yes. Get your backside off that table. A fine woman, a cultivated woman. She had nothing to do with the Emperor.
I do not believe that the General was suggesting an illicit acquaintance between the Emperor and his lady.
So what was he suggesting? Well, what? How with it?
So I took him rather to imply that this lady, not the Emperor, was the prime cause of your quarrel.
I have called him out near to half a dozen times. The cavalry knows it, but I have done that for some such petty nonsense. She was a lady whom I held in very high esteem. Her salon was very well known in Strasbourg. Yes, now I recall something else. Mm-hmm. He said to me in the public street, I've been burnt in my mind. He said to me, for all that I care, they can spit upon Napoleon Bonaparte.
Who were they?
They. When did the Emperor not have enemies? Dubé has a turncoat, that is a fact. And I say more, I say he never loved the Emperor. Never! Yes.
He saw a fair deal of campaigning.
When you meet him again, you tell him I'll prove the truth of it at the first opportunity. To the Emperor. Good luck to him, and good luck to those that love him.
But in less than 100 days, Napoleon was defeated.
And I offer you another toast. Let us give thanks for the safe return of His Sacred Majesty Louis the 18th. God save the King!
God save the King!
Devil take the ogre to Saint Helena.
Indeed.
This side of the grave, it seems a fit and proper place for him. Come, sir, you're a royalist now, like the rest of us. Where else would you wish him to be?
One celebration at a time, sir, don't you think?
No, I do not. The boy's a royalist. And I can give you more good news. He has been summoned to attend upon Marshal Saint-Cyr in Paris. He will have command in the King's army. So, tell us, what fate would you choose for the ogre?
Sat next to his bride, Adele, he contemplates the question.
I believe the Emperor chose his own fate. It was his habit to do so. I learnt my trade in his service, as did Marshal Saint-Cyr. The King's army will have more realists than royalists.
He stands and looks at Adele.
I have just agreed to terms with this lady. And I'm much too tired for further questions.
Dubert and Adele walk over to a lavish three-tiered cake. He pulls out his sword and, beaming with delight, they both use it to cut the cake.
Well done.
Oh, lovely.
Bravo.
Paris, 1816. Supporting himself with his walking cane, Dubert makes his way through a busy outside Parisian cafe full of civilians and military men. As he leaves the cafe's courtyard, he spots the worn and aged colonel sat pondering over a glass of wine.
Good day, Colonel.
Dubert, isn't it?
That's right.
You took care to play safe, eh? Very spruce you look, too. Very tame. Spruce. Found a nice place with His Majesty, everyone? Oh, Gabriel Farreau was right. Poor devil. He always said you were a slippery fellow.
How is General Ferro?
Don't know.
It interests me very little. In fact, I do not know.
Ferro was arrested. They have him on the butcher's list.
He's to go before the special commission.
Yes. Now, that was a man that would ride straight at anything. He ends up at the mercy of that sewer rat. Boucher. Good as dead.
Dubert walks into a large entrance hall. A man sitting by the door points to the ceiling. A deluge of water cascades from above. He makes his way up a grand staircase covered in sheets into a dimly lit palatial room. The floor and the room's elegant furniture are covered by large dust sheets. He stops by an opened mirrored door. Inside, a portly man is dressing himself in a brown velvet tailcoat and frilly cravat in front of a large freestanding mirror.
Come a little closer, please. I'm all attention.
Dubert moves closer and watches the man admiring his reflection.
I believe Your Excellency has chosen a list of officers to be tried for treason by the special court.
I am the president of the commission that chose them, yes.
I've come to petition that the name of General Gabriel Ferro be removed from that list.
I have letters of introduction. Marshal St. Cyr, Marshal MacDonald.
You indeed. By all accounts, he is a very big Bonaparte.
So is every trooper and grenadier in the army. As Your Excellency knows, General Ferro hasn't the brains to make himself dangerous to anyone. Rather, he could not conceivably hurt the state.
He has a busy tongue. He talks himself onto our list. We could not keep him off it. Something of a virtuoso in survival. You will be aware of that, I think. Besides, I despise these nobodies who offer their neck to the block. The list is in my control, because if it were not, my own name would most certainly be on it. Our new masters and their ladies, bless them, are out for a deal of blood. Please be seated. I'm an honest soldier's face, General, but you have come here to intrigue with me, is that not so? Have you not come here to intrigue with me? Is this fellow a relation of yours?
No.
Intimate friend?
No, not exactly. We've had a long association.
Most mysterious. Still, you have two marshals at your back.
He opens a drawer and pulls out a piece of paper with a list of names on it.
Yes, there's your man, Ferro, Gabriel Florian. He will live in the provinces under police supervision, you realize that, of course. But he will live. Take a pen, my dear fellow, and cross out the name. I can't do everything for you.
Dubert crosses Ferro's name off.
Your Excellency, I must beg you to keep my interference a secret. Most particularly from General Ferro.
General Ferro, alive or dead, is not worth a moment's gossip.
Dressed in a long black double-breasted military capote and black two-pointed hat, Ferro ambles through a street in the provinces. He stops and watches as a farmer and his oxen pass. He makes his way towards a small cafe with one empty table outside and sits down. An old haggard waitress in grey tattered clothes brings him a carafe of wine and one small glass. In the late afternoon, a pregnant Adele sits with Dubert by the crackling fire in their sumptuous home. Smoking a long pipe, he reads while she holds her stomach and gazes at her bump.
There. Give me your hand.
She places her hand on her stomach and then taps her bump.
Sir, kick for the general. Perfect discipline.
That's not a grenadier. Most ladylike, I assure you.
He's not kicking you.
She turns to him with a straight face. He smiles at her and pulls her close to his chest. They kiss and embrace, smiling contently. Inside a grubby provincial cafe, a man swats a fly with his newspaper. At another table, Ferreau sits eating an apple.
General, a fellow in the cavalry, you called out several times. Dubert, wasn't it?
Reading from his newspaper.
General Dubert, who has been on sick leave in the south, is to take command of the 5th Cavalry Brigade at Reims.
Same fellow, isn't it?
Ferreau walks over to the man and studies his newspaper. With the aid of his walking cane, Dubert strolls across a misty tree-lined field with two beagles running alongside him. He approaches a small brook on the edge of the field with a makeshift wooden crossing. As he begins to cross, two men wearing pointed cocked black hats appear at the other side.
Good day.
Good day.
Sir, I wonder, could you direct us to the residence of General Armand Dubert?
What is it you want with him?
I want a quiet word with him. Confidential, you understand?
This place is quiet enough.
You aren't the general, are you, sir, by any chance?
Yes, sir, I am.
Thought so. Met you once after Ratisbon. Well, sir, all we need for the present are the names of your friends.
What friends?
We are the friends of General Ferreau.
We'll need to work pretty sharp. Police surveillance. They keep us bottled up at Vatin, down there, right? Slip out, slip back. No one the wiser. Risky, of course, but honour before everything.
Honour first.
I could have you both carted back where you come from in irons. I swear to God, I could whisper. Only whisper, and you'd both be dead in a ditch before morning. This is royalist country. This is my home.
We have proceeded on the assumption that you were a gentleman.
Yes, damn you. Damn you, I am.
Very well, then.
We would like to know the names of your friends.
I have no friends stupid enough to take part in such a farce.
I suppose I could act for him.
He could act for you.
Not what you'd call a steady fellow.
Yes, it's to take a steady fellow to command a brigade.
I don't suppose General Ferreau would accept an apology.
Out of the question.
You could declare yourself unfit to be a soldier and resign your command. That might do.
It wouldn't do. The general has received too deep an injury.
I see. I will meet you tomorrow at sunrise, here. Sabres, whatever you choose.
Pistols.
Pistols?
Defiantly, Dubert crosses the bridge past Ferreau's two companions. At home in his bedroom, Dubert stokes the fire.
Are you coming to bed now?
I should be late. I have some work to do.
He bends down and tenderly kisses Adele. Dubert practices firing his pistol, then places it carefully back in its box. Elsewhere, by candlelight, Farrow places a small round bullet into the barrel of his pistol, then snuffs out the candle. De Burr stands watching the bootmaker in his workshop at Bamassique.
My dear boy, I'm very sorry. Did I disturb you?
No, I was awake.
Now, I promised these for tomorrow morning. A tradesman has to keep his word.
You ought not to tire yourself.
Oh, I'm an old man. Awake at odd times, sleep at odd times. But you shouldn't be up. Is something the matter?
No. I have some work to do before morning. To keep my word.
Dubert looks solemnly at the bootmaker. He spots two ripe oranges and picks them up.
May I?
Yes, do.
Good night.
Sat with a glass of wine and a plate of bread, cheese and pears, De Burr sits at home contemplating his fate. In De Burr's empty room, mice gorge on his leftovers. In the early morning frost, he walks with his cane through the grounds of his home towards the tree-lined field to meet Farrow. Sitting in the field with the frost now melted, he stares into the distance, taking in his surroundings. Eating one of the bootmaker's oranges, he savours each bite. Sat with his thoughts, he hears Farrow and his companions in the distance, and with a foreboding look, turns to see them appear through the woodland.
Good day, sir.
Good day to you.
Poor ground, sir, not suitable at all.
Oh, I think it will do. Came here to kill each other. Any ground is suitable for that.
I suggest the General and I enter the ruin from opposite sides, alone, and seek each other out.
Two shots each. Fire at will. Is it agreed?
I'll consult with the officer who's acting for General Farrow.
Everyone heard me.
Yes! I heard you.
Removing his two-pointed cocked hat, Farrow walks over to De Burr, closely followed by his companions. Farrow takes off his long black military capote and places it on the ground. His companion opens a wooden box and hands him two pistols. De Burr pulls out his two pistols and turns to Farrow.
Good sign. East side, General.
With one of his companions following closely behind, Farrow eyeballs De Burr as he walks past him into the woodland. Stood deep in thought, with one pistol resting on each shoulder, De Burr waits with the other companion. The man pulls out a pocket watch and turns to him.
Forward.
Deep in the misty woodland, De Burr hobbles without his cane up an ivy-covered bank. He staggers alongside the outer wall of a derelict castle. Through the sun-punctured mist, Farrow appears inside the once entrance of the ruined building. With a pistol resting on each shoulder, De Burr walks along the outer wall.
Sir, I must find myself at a loss.
With his pistols tucked in his waistband, Farrow blows on his hands and rubs them to keep warm. Slowly he pulls out his weapons and carefully edges down the bank by the outer wall. At the bottom, he crosses his pistols over his chest and listens for a moment. Dubert makes his way stealthily through the undergrowth. Pharaoh creeps up and over a mound of moss-covered stones from one of the castle's crumbled-down walls. Darting through the outside of the ruin, high above the sweeping valley below, Pharaoh crouches low to the ground and scans the area surrounding him. Suddenly, he scurries back inside the castle. On the opposite side of the ruin, looking out across a different part of the valley, Dubert stands surveying the land. Slowly, he limps back down into the surrounding woodland. Pharaoh sneaks out through the trees and onto a narrow walkway connecting two parts of the ruin. Up on a higher part of ground above the narrow walkway, Dubert hides himself behind a tree. Pharaoh creeps inside just as Dubert steps out from behind his cover.
I'm not fanatical enough to persevere in this absurdity.
Anxiously, Dubert edges along one of the castle's ivy-covered walls. Through the deep foliage, Pharaoh inches along a lower part of the same wall. With his eyes darting quickly from side to side, Dubert sidles along the wall. He slides down and lowers his pistols with a brief sigh of relief. On a lower part of the wall out of sight, Pharaoh waits, pressed tightly up against the moss-covered stone, looking up at his opponent. As Dubert stands up, Pharaoh shoots. Dubert falls to the ground. Pharaoh scrambles towards him with his pistols poised. Dubert's black boot pokes out from behind the foliage. Edging towards it, Pharaoh tries to look for any movement. Dubert's black boot, covered with beads of dew, lies motionless. Pharaoh jumps a little to get a clearer view. Unable to see them, he moves closer. Dubert's foot twitches. Pharaoh peers out from the cover of the foliage. Dubert's foot twitches. Pharaoh leaps out and fires. He misses and Dubert shoots back. Pharaoh dodges the bullet and falls to the ground. Dubert points his pistol at Pharaoh and slowly gets to his feet. Pharaoh fires his empty pistol and throws his hands in the air.
La!
Pointing his pistol at him, Dubert stares intensely at his rival.
Come on, kill me! Now! Now!
Dubert limps purposely through the tree-lined field, walking past Pharaoh's companion, who stood waiting.
Is he dead?
Ignoring him, Dubert wraps up his weapons in a protective cloth and packs them away. With a look of grave concern, Pharaoh's companions run off towards the woodland. Dubert smiles to himself. At Valmasique, Dubert smiles as he watches the bootmaker fast asleep in his chair. As he turns to leave, Adele appears at the door to the stable block in her nightdress, with a blanket wrapped tightly round her.
Where have you been? I was so worried.
I'm sorry. I had to work late, and then I went for a walk.
Oh, it's in the bag.
He forages in his bag and pulls out the other orange and presents it to her. Deep in thought, Farrow trudges up a steep country path through the muddy leaves fallen on the ground. Wrapped up against the cold in his long black military capote, he slowly comes to a stop and stares up into the grey sky above him as the rain begins to fall. He bows his head in defeat and walks on. Dubert's final words to him run through his mind.
For 15 years. I shall never again do what you demand of me. By every rule of single combat, from this moment your life belongs to me. Is that not correct? Then I shall simply declare you dead. In all of your dealings with me, you will do me the courtesy to conduct yourself as a dead man. I have submitted to your notions of honor long enough. You will now submit to mine.
Humiliated and defeated, Farrow stands on top of a bluff in his two-pointed cocked hat, looking out over the river winding through the beautiful valley below him. As the wind blows, a shaft of light cuts through the vast grey skies and glistens on the water. Titles roll.